Well, it's nice to be introduced, but I have to tell you, I was here 10 years ago, and we have simply continued the struggle, and as you know, we are celebrating the 10th anniversary of the 50 Years is Enough movement, at the same time that we look at the 60 years of the World Bank. And I want to just refer to one of the points that Soren made, because I was reminded earlier today that students at the University of Vermont played an active part when we were campaigning for the universities in the United States to divest of their involvement, their corporate investment in the apartheid system in South Africa. And there may even be people here tonight, and I would like to thank them, who were students at that time and were involved in the struggle against apartheid. And as Soren also mentioned, we are now engaged in a similar struggle, but on a very much bigger scale. We're really talking about a struggle against global apartheid, a global agenda primarily written for the world by the World Bank, the IMF, International Monetary Fund, and the WTO, the World Trade Organization. And so, just as the people in Vermont were helping us to overthrow the apartheid system in South Africa, we come to you to ask you to continue that struggle. We've entered a new stage, and I trust that you will be willing to assist in a struggle which affects you as much as it affects people in other parts of the world. So there is a direct connection. I think Njoki Njewu has given you some indication of the role of the World Bank and the IMF. Justice Anthony Arnov, who has been in Baghdad, has given you a sense of the hardship, the terrible suffering being inflicted on people in Iraq. And as you know, the source of that pain, that suffering, is the United States, together with what they call a coalition of the willing or a coalition of the reluctant. It's hard to tell. But clearly the United States and the people of the United States are very deeply implicated in these issues. And so this is one reason why we come to you and ask you to take action against the World Bank, take action against the IMF, take action on the issue of Iraq, and particularly get ready for action next month. So if you do nothing else tonight, I'm going to ask you to take out with you as a reminder for yourself and in order to generate energy and activism among others, the newsletter of 50 Years is Enough, Economic Justice News, and take it with you, make use of it. There are free copies at the back of the hall. Please assist in actively developing that activism. And I'm going to read from the back page right now because it's so important. The April 22 to 25 mobilization, a call to action. 2004 is the 60th anniversary of the World Bank and the IMF. They're planning a 60th birthday party. We are saying it should be the 60th unbirthday party. And some of us are talking of it as a retirement celebration, although I like also Anthony Arnov's formulation, which is, let's talk of the abolition of the World Bank and the IMF, and let's start talking about an alternative to that, which more truly serves the interests of people all over the world. We should educate, organize, and mobilize. And there will be a mass mobilization April 22nd to April 25, 2004. But in addition, we're asking people to organize events wherever you are, so that if you're not taking part in the events down in Washington in April, make use of these dates, make a note of these dates, and organize events here as well and in other parts of the world. I hope you can hear me all right. If I'm not, you signal me from the back or something. I think we've had a rather dismal picture, particularly the account that Anthony gave, but even listening to the role of the World Bank and its destructive impact on economies all over the world, particularly in the third world, in Africa, in Asia, the Caribbean, South America, it really is very depressing. So I thought I might kind of lighten things up a little and suggest to you that at the same time that there are all these depressing events, there is cause for optimism. We can talk of a historical moment, and I'll talk for a little while later on about something called an article by Richard Falk, professor of international law at Princeton, who's just done a very interesting essay talking about a Gandhian moment. And there will be copies of it available for you if you're interested. But let's just for a moment remember that March 20th, the anniversary of the invasion, the attack on Iraq, was this year, as it was last year, an occasion on which action took place in all five continents and across the planet. Literally, planetary action. Action against war, action for peace. Last year, we don't have the figures for this year in, or they're not reliable. The estimate is 11 million people took part in protests across the planet, including, mark you, up in the Arctic. There were scientists there who marched in the snow in protest against the attack on Iraq. And this year, we don't know the figures yet, but indeed, there was action all over the world. Some of the lists on the internet give you something like 377 cities across the world where there was protest on that action. And it's important to remember that when it took place last year, the New York Times, although it contrived to misreport much of the events and if possible to suppress them or to ignore them, as it did this year, I expect you know that the big story about action all across the world was tucked away on page 20 of the New York Times. You had to go and hunt for it. But last year, the New York Times said that the significance of a march of millions of people across the world was that there now was in the world two superpowers. That there is now in the world two superpowers. I'm sure many of you encountered this. That the United States government and the military might of the United States represents that one superpower. But the other superpower is people in the streets. It's grassroots people in the streets across the world, people saying no to war and yes to peace. And that is the important moment that I want to focus on and share some of my own optimism with you, and then hopefully we'll carry that optimism over to Washington and next month when we assert our opposition to the World Bank and the IMF as two of the primary instruments of oppression, of poverty, and of misery in the world. And we'll come back to that in a moment. But you must remember the important confrontation which took place in 1999, at the beginning of the century. And we talked about it in a class today where I was very impressed at the kind of informed questions and informed comments that I was getting, so that a lot of this, I'm sure, is already familiar to you. But from that major confrontation in November 1999, when you had in Seattle a concentration of some of the greatest political and economic power in the world, but also a concentration of people in the streets of Seattle. And when the WTO sat down and said, we are going to write a millennial agenda for the world, on how the world is going to go from now on, and how the world is going to be run by a corporate agenda. There were people in the streets who said, no, you will not do it, and it did not take place. There was no corporate agenda written in Seattle. And that was the turning point in my mind. There were many others, and there have been a series of points thereafter. Washington, New York, Quebec City, Prague, Genoa, Johannesburg, Durban, Cancun, around the world, people have taken a stand. And around the world, people have made a statement, we will not accept the dictation of this corporate agenda. We reject it, and we will continue to resist it. We will assert our opposition to it. And that is the moment I think we have arrived at now. And that is why I refer to this important essay by Richard Falk, Princeton University, in which he talks of what he calls a Gandhian moment. And a Gandhian moment is more than simply a moment of opposition. It's more than simply saying no to war. It's also saying that we assert the futility of war, that war does not solve problems, that on the contrary, war generates fresh problems, just as violence creates a spiral of violence, and one injury leads to another. And the man who watches his sons being killed in the streets of Gaza is a man who tomorrow will be a terrorist if he was not one before, because of the anger and the pain that is inflicted. And of course, that suffering can happen anywhere in the world, including in Iraq. You don't solve terrorism by inflicting terrorism. What kind of nonsense is that? What folly is it that makes people think this is the way you solve violence, by inflicting more violence and generating more violence? And so there is in the world today, and this is why I think we have grounds for optimism. There is in the world today a far deeper and a far wider understanding that wars do not solve problems, that we must commit ourselves to change by peaceful means. And of course, does not exclude the right to self-defense if violence is inflicted on you. But there is growing all over the world today this demand for a different kind of world. When we met after Seattle, and if you want to understand the importance of Seattle, you have to go all the way down to Brazil and to Porto Alegre. You have to go to India and to Mumbai to see how the impulse that was generated in Seattle has developed globally all over the world and continues to grow. But it didn't happen by accident. It happened through hard work. It happened through study. It happened through the exchange of ideas, and particularly the exchange of ideas with people on a basis of respect, not on a basis of attempting to dictate, not on any kind of hierarchical approach of top-down decisions, and above all, by a far greater participation by women in the decision-making process and in the activist process. And so we have less of the old-fashioned male-dominated organization, which really did a lot of damage and not a whole lot of good. And we better face up to that as well. So we've got a long way to go, but I see us with grounds for optimism. And that optimism came out of hard work, out of preparation, out of study, out of commitment. And that's where we must be now, and that's where we must go from here onwards. It seems to me this is an important moment. It is a moment we must seize. My mother used to quote something out of Shakespeare's Julius Caesar. You know, there is a time in the tide of affairs of men which, taken at the flood, leads on to fortune. We really have a moment which we must seize. And because there is this moment and because we must seize it, I checked with our chair and he said, sure, there will be time for questions and comments and discussion. So I turn it over to you now, and I turn it over to you with the commitment that I myself will be in D.C., and I hope that many more of you will be there. And if we can't be there, wherever we are, let's organize. Because this is not a struggle which is localized to capitals. This is a struggle of people all over the world. This is a global struggle, and we should all be part of it. It is our world that we're trying to remake, and I'm glad to be part of it. Thank you.